May it please the court, good afternoon. The court has set this time to hear the appeal of Ralph Swan versus the state of Delaware. My name is Herbert Mondros. I represent the appellant. With me today, I'm pleased to introduce Cheryl Brown from the Baltimore, Maryland firm of Funk & Bolton. And with the court's permission, Ms. Brown, who has been admitted pro hoc vice, will present the argument on behalf of the appellant.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, in November of 1996, two intruders shot and killed Kenneth Warren during a botched burglary of his home. Mr. Swan was convicted and sentenced to death based on evidence, critical evidence, that the jury heard, but there is more evidence, additional evidence, new evidence that supports Mr. Swan's claim of innocence and his request for a new trial. On February 17, 2006, Adam Norcross, Mr. Swan's alleged co-conspirator, testified before the Superior Court at an evidentiary hearing on Mr. Swan's motion for new trial. During that hearing, he presented additional new evidence indicating that Mr. Swan was not his accomplice. There was a subsequent hearing in October of 2006. The state presented evidence, and at that time, the Superior Court denied Mr. Swan's motion for new trial. Mr. Swan appeals that decision on two grounds. First, Mr. Swan submits that the evidence, the new evidence, is sufficient, especially when taken as a whole with all of the additional evidence that supports his claim of innocence, and a new trial was warranted. Mr. Swan also submits that the Superior Court, in considering the credibility of Mr. Norcross, improperly considered out-of-court statements that had not been presented to the jury because the Superior Court had excluded those out-of-court statements. There are three-pronged standard.
Now, what was the basis that they were excluded earlier?
These statements were excluded as hearsay evidence. Only portions of the statements were allowed, and only Norcross's statements regarding his own participation in the crime were allowed. His out-of-court statements that directly implicated Mr. Swan were not allowed.
Okay, but if at a new trial, Norcross, I assume Norcross would be called to testify?
Yes, Your Honor.
Would these statements be admissible in cross-examination of him?
It's possible, Your Honor. We have not actually looked at and considered whether every single statement could be considered or could come in. However, our argument is that if the Superior Court could consider those statements and say the jury would have heard this additional evidence, then the court should also consider the other evidence that supports Mr. Swan's claim. And that evidence includes some DNA evidence which was not presented at trial and which Mr. Swan now argues in his Rule 61 motion should have been presented by his counsel and was not, either due to prosecutorial misconduct or due to ineffective assistance of counsel. And the Superior Court was not aware of this evidence at the time of the hearing.
What's the nature of that DNA evidence that's the subject of the Rule 61 motion?
The DNA evidence, let me backtrack a little bit. At the crime scene, there was some blood evidence. That evidence was tested and compared to the blood taken from Mr. Swan and Mr. Norcross. And the report indicates that that blood does not belong to Mr. Swan or Mr. Norcross. We submit that that evidence, the fact that it's not Mr. Swan or Mr. Norcross, supports Mr. Norcross's claim that there was a different accomplice, and that accomplice was wounded at the scene. That would explain why there's the blood evidence of a third party.
Wasn't the victim's blood?
It doesn't. The blood evidence did not match the victim's blood or anyone in the victim's family. And so, just backtracking a little bit, during the trial, the actual evidence did not include any fingerprint evidence. It didn't include any DNA evidence, and it did not even include an eyewitness identification. The only identification that was made was by Tina Warren Leager, who indicated that the intruders wore masks, and she could not identify either one of them specifically. What she does say, however, is that one of them was injured, possibly injured, during the course of the botched burglary because that person was rubbing his shoulder. That is also consistent with Mr. Norcross's current testimony or new evidence, which is that Wayne was wounded at the scene of the crime, and Wayne was actually the perpetrator and not Mr. Swan.
Could you tell me something about this Wayne? Do we have any information as to who this person is other than that his first name is Wayne, he's dead, and nobody knows where he is?
Yes, the only evidence that we have so far supporting Mr. Norcross's story is basically Mr. Norcross's testimony. And that testimony is that Wayne was an apparent drug buddy. He did not remember his last name, and according to Mr. Norcross, he killed him shortly after the crime, supposedly to put him out of his misery.
But he doesn't remember where he killed him?
I believe he said it was at the side of the road in Delaware, somewhere in the whereabouts of the crime scene, but he has not been able to say specifically where Wayne was allegedly, his body was allegedly left.
Well, Didn't the trial court basically say this whole Wayne story is totally uncorroborated, and Mr. Norcross is providing just enough information to say, yeah, there's somebody else, I don't know who he is, I don't even remember where I left his body, you know, there's no way of finding out whether Wayne ever actually existed, let alone what happened to him, and that nothing about the history of this matter in terms of statements that Norcross made initially would corroborate the existence of this Wayne. So basically there's no reason to believe Mr. Norcross.
There may be little evidence to support the, I guess, who Mr. Wayne or who Wayne was. However, there is additional evidence, the DNA evidence, which supports the story that there was another perpetrator. And what we submit is that Mr. Swan has the right to have the jury hear that evidence. And it's quite likely that the jury, given the DNA evidence and Mr. Norcross's statement, would say, Mr. Norcross is such a habitual liar, do we really want to believe him about anything he said, implicating or not implicating Mr. Swan? And let's look at the DNA evidence, and the DNA evidence suggests that Mr. Swan wasn't there. And if Mr. Swan wasn't there, then the jury could reasonably conclude that he did not commit this crime.
Did Mr. Swan testify at the trial?
No, Your Honor, he did not.
Why is this bifurcated? I mean, there's a separate issue pending before the Superior Court on the DNA evidence. And we have this issue, which was a motion for new trial, which technically, because it's beyond the time period, is a Rule 61 motion, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So we have this Rule 61 motion relating to Wayne. There's a separate Rule 61 motion relating to the DNA. Why are these bifurcated? Why isn't it part of one proceeding where your argument that the DNA should be considered could be made as part of the basis for the new trial?
I can't speak necessarily for prior post-conviction counsel who filed the first two petitions, the motion for a new trial and the motion for post-conviction relief under Rule 61. What I can say is that once we came into the case and started the investigation, which was in late summer of 2006, the first evidentiary hearing had already been held in February of 2006, and a second hearing was scheduled for the state to present its evidence in October. We were given until late December to file our amended Rule 61 motion, and it's at that time, or subsequent to the hearing actually, that we really developed the details regarding the DNA report and the DNA evidence and included it in our amended Rule 61. And in fact, part of our argument on this appeal is that this case should really be remanded so that the Superior Court can consider or reconsider Mr. Norcross's testimony in light of the evidence that we intend to present at the Rule 61 hearing, which has now been set for June. And if it's not remanded, then we respectfully request that this court not make a decision and wait until the entire record is here before ruling on our appeal on the Rule 33 motion.
But the ground for post-conviction relief based upon the DNA evidence that you've cited was not before the Superior Court at the time of the hearing?
Correct, Your Honor.
And what application was made, if any, to the Superior Court to reconsider the denial of post-conviction relief in view of this DNA evidence?
The only request we had made to the Superior Court was that it delay making a ruling on the Rule 33 motion until the hearing on the Rule 61 motion was held. At that time, however, we hadn't even developed the DNA evidence, and we didn't fully develop it until after even we had noted the appeal to this court. With that posture, I'm not aware of any process wherein we could have taken it back from the appellate court. Our understanding was the record had already been transferred and gone back to the Superior Court.
Counsel, going back to the original trial, was there an alibi defense?
An alibi? Yes, Your Honor. There was an alibi witness who testified that Mr. Swan, during every weekday during the period in which this crime occurred, was at a boxing gym. And according to Mr. Norcross's testimony, that corroborates that, because he said he used Mr. Swan's car but dropped him off at his gym before picking up Wayne.
All right. Just so I understand the procedural context, the Superior Court judge made the decision on the Rule 33/61 motion involving Wayne based upon all the evidence which was presented to him at the evidentiary hearing.
Yes, Your Honor.
There was no DNA evidence. That's a whole separate issue.
That's correct. Okay. That's correct, Your Honor. And again, our argument is that given that we developed this later, that evidence plays an important role, because part of the reason why the Superior Court denied the motion for new trial is the fact that there was, according to the court, a lack of corroborating evidence. And this DNA evidence, we submit, at least partially corroborates Mr. Norcross's testimony. I mean, the Superior Court could very well have been persuaded otherwise, given the nature of this evidence.
Let me follow up for a moment about the DNA evidence, and I realize that it may be premature in a sense because it hasn't been fully developed. But is it your representation to this court that the DNA evidence establishes that neither Mr. Norcross or Mr. Swan or any of the victim or the victim's family members' DNA was found in this blood?
Yes, Your Honor. And of course, I'm not an expert. I can only base what I say on my conversations and interview of the DNA analyst who I talked with and who explained the test results to me. And according to her explanation, this blood evidence was not from Mr. Swan, not from Mr. Norcross, and not from Mr. Warren or any other member of the Warren family. And she explains in detail how she comes to that result.
Okay. You're now into your rebuttal time, which you're welcome
yes.
to use.
And I would prefer not to, Your Honor. I respectfully request again that Mr. Swan's motion for new trial either be remanded back to the Superior Court for reconsideration or that this court delay its decision until the entire record is before this court. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Justice Berger, Justice Jacobs, Justice Ridgely. May it please the court.
Can I start where we just left off? Why shouldn't we just get this matter resolved in a complete fashion instead of deciding on this issue when there's seems like there's another half to it that's going forward?
Well, the court can do it either way. What was before the court is before the trial court is what's been presented today, and the only testimony presented, or the only evidence presented on behalf of Mr. Swan at the new trial motion hearings was the testimony of Mr. Norcross. So it was simply a credibility determination by the trial judge, and the trial judge found that Mr. Norcross's new version or recantation of his earlier incriminatory statements was not credible. Whether this court wants to decide that issue or not, or delay that until the Rule 61 matter has been completed, that's simply up to the court. It really doesn't make any difference to the state.
What's your understanding about the DNA evidence? Do you have any understanding about what it is or not?
A little bit. What was done in this case was there was a blood spot found on the homicide victim, Mr. Warren's sweatpants. That evidence was sent to a lab in New Orleans, and the testing was done by a lady named Gina Panetta at the time of the trial. The results, as the state initially understood them, were that there were actually two donors on this blood spot, that one was, in fact, Kenneth Warren, the homicide victim, but the other donor was unknown. The state did take blood samples from both Mr. Norcross and Mr. Swan. The initial testing, as the state understood it, was that the second donor on this blood spot was neither Mr. Swan nor Mr. Norcross. There was some discussion shortly before trial or at the time of trial, I guess, with one of the prosecutors. He spoke by telephone with Ms. Panetta, and at that time, that's where the confusion or the dispute arises as to exactly what was said at that point. Ms. Panetta's most recent recollection is that she said, well, that's what the evidence is. I can't identify either Mr. Swan or Mr. Norcross as the second donor. The prosecutor at the trial, Mr. Gary, had a different recollection. That is, his understanding was that while initially in the initial report that the state had received had excluded those people, there was some slight possibility if one of the assumptions was altered that would not completely exclude Mr. Swan. Receiving that information, the state advised Mr. Witherall, one of the trial attorneys for Mr. Swan, of that information, and Mr. Witherall, and this is actually on the record at the trial, made a determination that he was not going to call Ms. Panetta to testify about the DNA evidence because it was no longer conclusively eliminating Mr. Swan, but the understanding of the both counsel. Mr. Witherall also spoke independently with Ms. Panetta by phone, that there was a remote possibility that Mr. Swan could be the second donor. So for that reason, neither the state nor the defense at Mr. Swan's trial presented any DNA evidence. The dispute that's arisen now is Ms. Panetta said, no, I never told anybody that, but that's a different recollection 4 or 5 years later. What's on the record is what Mr. Witherall said he was told at the time, so the Superior Court's going to have to resolve that. An evidentiary hearing is scheduled for June 26 on that issue, plus I think there's about 10 other post-conviction claims as well.
And what about this Wayne person? Is there anything further that is scheduled with respect to whether he exists and whether he can be found and so on, or is that just a dead issue?
Well, the pun's appropriate. I think it is a dead issue. He supposedly was shot by Mr. Norcross, according to Mr. Norcross's latest version of events, on November 4th, 1996. Body has never been found. The police have never been advised of any missing persons or report about Wayne. Mr. Norcross's information about Wayne was very scant. He had no address, didn't know his middle or last name, didn't know where he worked. His only information was that Wayne was apparently from New Jersey and had a sister that lived either in Middletown or Odessa. Mr. Norcross did not know the name or address of the sister. So as the trial judge correctly observed, it was virtually impossible for either the state or Mr. Swan to corroborate any of this testimony that was given.
And it's argued now that the DNA at issue at the next post-conviction relief hearing arguably corroborates the Wayne story.
Well, that's the argument. The state differs with that. I think the way to look at the DNA is, what do you have? You have a blood spot.
Well, let me just, because it's relevant to Justice Richard's question, at this forthcoming hearing, will the state be putting on its own DNA expert?
No, I don't think we will. I think the report and the analysis was what it was. The question is, what does it mean? And initially, the state didn't call the DNA person because there wasn't anything to connect that DNA to either Mr. Swan or Mr. Norcross. So in their separate trials, there was no DNA evidence introduced by the state. The issue, I think, about DNA is that what you have is a spot, a blood spot on the homicide victim's pants. Has two donors, in other words, two different people contributed to that blood spot. One is the homicide victim. That's what Ms. Bonetta said. The other one is simply unknown. There are different explanations for that. One, you have to assume that someone else was bleeding at the scene and that that person's blood, in fact, dropped at that particular location for it to be of any significance. The testimony at trial is in dispute about whether or not Mr. Swan was in fact shot in the house or outside the house. In the opinion by this court in Mr. Norcross's direct appeal, the issue was addressed when Mr. Norcross gave his statement on February 10, 2000 to the police. He said at that time, after Mr. Warren had been shot in his residence, that he and Mr. Swan left the residence, and when they were outside, Mr. Swan, and I'm reading from page 761 at 816 Atlantic 2nd, the Norcross direct appeal decision. Swan told Norcross that he wanted to go back and kill the woman, referring to Tina Warren, the widow, because she was a witness. Norcross stopped him by shooting Swan in the shoulder. So so Norcross's statement to the police after the day after he's arrested is that he shoots Swan in the shoulder, but that doesn't occur in the house. It occurs outside the house after they've already left. Swan's threatening to go back in the house and shoot Tina Warren. At that point, Mr. Norcross tells the Delaware State Police, that's when I shot Mr. Swan in the shoulder. Well, if he shot outside the house, there's not going to be DNA blood evidence in the house anyway, so it's irrelevant whether or not that person is the donor, the second donor in this case. So the testimony is confusing. The only other eyewitness is Tina Warren.
That the argument that you're making now has not been addressed by the Superior Court.
No, it hasn't, Your Honor.
Well, why shouldn't the Superior Court address it before we do?
Well, I think they should, and that's what they intend to do when we have the Rule 61 evidentiary hearing in June. And that's the first issue, and I think there's 10 other issues that the Superior Court's going to address. So if the court thinks the DNA evidence is as crucial as has been argued, then certainly it can hold this in abeyance until that matter is decided. I'm sure that'll probably be appealed, assuming that the post-conviction petition isn't granted. So that's kind of where we are with the DNA evidence. Unless Mr. Swan is in fact, or whoever the other co-participant is in fact bleeding in the house, it doesn't make any difference. Anyway, Mr. Norcross's statement to the police the day after he's apprehended was that he shoots Mr. Swan outside the house, so you wouldn't expect any blood evidence to be in the house in any event. And that's simply a dispute.
Again, I know I'm jumping the gun a little bit, but if there's a spot of blood on the victim, and that spot of blood is the victim's blood plus some other unknown person's blood, and I take it the victim's family has been excluded from that other category of unknown possibilities, right?
I don't know if they've been tested.
Okay.
I think all we asked was, is this other donor Mr. Swan or Mr. Norcross?
All right. Well, I guess we'll have to wait.
Yeah, I think until all of that's resolved, you know, we just don't know if the DNA evidence really amounts to anything or not. If the DNA evidence shows that the other donor or the blood spot's another family member or simply some other third party, the difficulty is it's just unknown at this point. But the issue that was before the trial court was a new trial motion. The only evidence was Mr. Norcross's testimony. The trial judge considered that and found that this jailhouse recantation by Mr. Norcross was simply not credible. There was no way to corroborate any of the information. As the judge said, it seemed more a tale from fiction than having anything to do with truth. It was certainly convenient that he had come up with this story that could not be corroborated by either side. However, it flew in the face of the numerous prior statements that Mr. Norcross had made, not only to the police, but to three other individuals, Matt Howe, Gino Roberto, and Mr. Norcross's former wife, Bridget Phillips, that in fact Mr. Swan was the other participant in the homicide. All of those statements occurred prior to Mr. Norcross's apprehension in February of 2000, when he spoke to the police the day after he was arrested, he again, for the fourth time, implicated Mr. Swan as the co-participant. The trial judge said that it simply was illogical as to why Mr. Norcross would involve Mr. Swan in this homicide if, in fact, Mr. Swan was not the participant. There wasn't any motive or incentive to say that it was Mr. Swan as opposed to this Wayne person.
One other factual point. Norcross originally said that he shot Mr. Swan outside of the house.
Correct.
Right?
Yes. That's what he tells the state police.
Right. Was there corroboration of that statement in that Mr. Swan had a bullet wound in his shoulder or not?
Well, he has a scar on his shoulder. When he was x-rayed, however, there was no bullet found in his shoulder. So there's a scar, I believe it's on his left shoulder, which may or may not be from a gunshot wound.
I was thinking more in terms of at about the time of the arrest.
Well, I don't know that there was anything at the time of the arrest. The only other evidence I recall was that one of the prosecution witnesses, Matt Howe, who had worked at the concrete plant in Middletown with both Mr. Swan and Mr. Norcross, recalled that within a day or two after Mr. Norcross telling him about breaking into this house and shooting the occupant, that he noticed that Mr. Swan had a bloodstained cloth or bandage on his shoulder. So there was that independent observation of an apparent injury to Mr. Swan's shoulder in the proximity of when the homicide occurred in 96. But the trial judge, I think, pointed out that here there wasn't any incentive for Mr. Norcross to falsely be telling people for a number of years that Mr. Swan was involved, and then suddenly after he's arrested, again, incriminates Mr. Swan, goes to trial, is convicted, is sentenced to death, has his appeal affirmed on direct appeal, to suddenly years later, in fact it's about 5 years after his statement to the state police in 2000, to come up with this new version implicating this individual named Wayne. All it appears that Mr. Norcross has really done here is substitute the name of this fictitious person, Wayne, for Swan here. And everything else seems to be pretty similar as to what else occurred here. The trial judge had to assess whether or not this evidence was likely to change the trial outcome. He determined that the version was simply so far-fetched and so contrary to all of the prior statements by Mr. Norcross that it was unworthy of belief and that a jury would not reasonably accept it. The law in Delaware is that jailhouse recantations, and that's what this is a recantation of prior incriminatory statements, are viewed rightfully with great suspicion. Under these circumstances, Mr. Norcross is on death row. His most recent testimony is that he confesses that he was there and that he pulled the trigger and says he was the one who fired the what is most likely the fatal shot, which was a shot down into Mr. Warren's head. Mr. Norcross knows that his days are numbered here. He has very little to lose by concocting a new version to try to eliminate someone else as a potential suspect in this particular prosecution, since there were two participants. Tina Warren knew that two people broke into her house. She just didn't know who they were because they were wearing camouflage clothing and masks, so she wasn't able to identify anybody with any particularity. There was no fingerprint evidence that was ever found. The weapons, according to Mr. Norcross, were thrown into the C&D canal shortly after the homicide, and he burned the camouflage clothing that the individuals were wearing that evening. So none of that physical evidence is available at this particular point. So all the trial judge had to do was make a credibility assessment. This was a non-jury proceeding, of course. The trial judge was sitting as both the trier of fact and determiner of witness credibility, and he determined that on the basis of everything that Mr. Norcross had said, that his story simply was not credible. He wasn't a believable witness, and since that was the only evidence being offered, there was no basis for a new trial to be granted.
But just to reiterate, they're now contending, the other side, that there is now additional evidence that should be considered on the issue of corroboration, which is the DNA. And we have not had that yet addressed by a superior court judge.
That's correct, yes. And that's a disputed matter as to whether or not it would reasonably be expected that there even would be any DNA evidence if the shooting of Mr. Swan, in fact, occurred outside the house, as Mr. Norcross said. Now, there's different versions. At other times, Mr. Norcross has told other people that Swan was shot inside the house. So given Mr. Norcross's numerous versions of what happened here, it's very difficult to sort out. But all it does show is if there is another donor, that it simply wasn't Mr. Swan. Mr. Swan very well could have been bleeding inside the house if he was shot there. But his blood simply didn't drop at that particular location. It may have dropped somewhere else, if it dropped at all. They were wearing camouflage clothing. There may have been no blood evidence left, even if he was shot inside the house. If there's any additional questions, I'll be happy to try to answer those.
Thank you.
Your Honors, I would like to clarify a couple of points that the state raised. First, with respect to Ms. Pineda's recollection of what the conversation she had with both the prosecution and with Mr. Swan's trial counsel, her recollection is different from the state's. But more importantly, we pressed Ms. Pineda on the issue of is there a remote possibility that this blood stain that was found inside of the Warren residence was Mr. Swan's? And she said she couldn't put a number on it. We said 1,000 to 1, 1,000,000 to 1. What's the remote possibility? And she said basically that there was no scientific basis for her to have ever said that there was a remote possibility. And she explained the report to us, and that supports her statement. That's the evidence that we believe the Superior Court needs to hear. Secondly, the state seems to want to have it both ways. During Mr. Swan's trial, the whole theory of the case was Mr. Swan had been injured in the house. Ms. Warren Leger had seen him injured. He was rubbing his shoulder, and that Mr. Swan had a wound on his shoulder that was supposedly occurred at the time of the incident. Now, the state wants to rely on Mr. Norcross's other story that, no, Mr. Swan was shot outside of the house. This is sort of a self-serving statement as well, because at that time, Mr. Norcross was trying to probably save himself by saying that Swan had actually shot Mr. Warren. Swan was going to go back and kill Mrs. Warren, and Norcross was the hero shooting Mr. Swan outside of the house. So we submit the state shouldn't have it both ways, at least not during the post-conviction proceedings. If they want to change the strategy at a new trial, that's fine, but we don't believe they should be able to do it during these proceedings. And finally, the question of, you know, is Mr. Norcross reliable? Perhaps he is, perhaps he isn't. We submit the jury should hear all of Mr. Norcross's story and his new story, his new testimony, and test that in front of the jury. One question the Superior Court asked Mr. Norcross was, why did you implicate Mr. Swan? He explained, I thought Swan turned me in, so that's part of the reason why I implicated him to the police, at least. The question is also, why change your story now? He is on death row, but he still has a lot to lose. He's still on appeal. He's still trying to find some sort of remedy and relief so that he is not executed. Certainly, changing his story and saying, I'm the one that shot Mr. Warren, and I'm also the one that shot this other person, Wayne. Now I've got two murders that I should be accountable for. That doesn't help him on this appeal. So we believe that a jury hearing all this evidence could reasonably conclude that Mr. Norcross has not been telling the truth and Mr. Swan is innocent. Thank you.
Thank you. The court will take this matter under advisement and stand in recess.